Chapter 4. The street in which Mr. Blunt lived presented itself to our eyes, narrow, silent, empty, and dark, but with enough gas lamps in it to disclose its most striking feature, a quantity of flagpoles sticking out above many of its closed portals. It was the street of consuls, and I remarked to Mr. Blunt that coming out in the morning he could survey the flags of all nations almost except his own. The U.S. consulate was on the other side of the town. He mumbled through his teeth that he took good care to keep clear of his own consulate. "Are you afraid of the consul's dog?" I asked jocularly. The consul's dog weighed about a pound and a half, and was known to the whole town as exhibited on the consular forearm in all places, at all hours, but mainly at the hour of the fashionable promenade on the Prado. But I felt my jest misplaced when Mills growled low in my ear, "They are all Yankees there." I murmured a confused, "Of course. Books are nothing." I discovered that I had never been aware before that the Civil War in America was not printed matter, but a fact only about 10 years old. "Of course. He was a South Carolinian gentleman." I was a little ashamed of my want of tact. Meantime, looking like the conventional conception of a fashionable reveler, with his opera hat pushed off his forehead, Captain Blunt was having some slight difficulty with his latch key, for the house before which we had stopped was not one of those many-storied houses that made up the greater part of the street. It had only one row of windows above the ground floor. Dead walls abutting onto it indicated that it had a garden. Its dark front presented no marked architectural character, and in the flickering light of a street lamp it looked a little as though it had gone down in the world. The greater then was my surprise to enter a hall paved in black and white marble, and in its dimness appearing of palatial proportions. Mr. Blunt did not turn up the small solitary gas jet, but led the way across the black and white pavement past the end of the staircase, past a door of gleaming dark wood with a heavy bronze handle. It gave access to his rooms, he said, but he took us straight onto the studio at the end of the passage. It was rather a small place tacked on in the manner of a lean-to to the garden side of the house. A large lamp was burning brightly there. The floor was of mere flat stones, but the few rugs scattered about, though extremely worn, were very costly. There was also there a beautiful sofa upholstered in pink figured silk, an enormous divan with many cushions, some splendid armchairs of various shapes but all very shabby, a round table, and in the midst of these fine things a small common iron stove. Somebody must have been attending it lately, for the fire roared and the warmth of the place was very grateful after the bone-searching cold blasts of Mistral outside. Mills, without a word, flung himself on the divan, and, propped on his arm, gazed thoughtfully at a distant corner, where in the shadow of a monumental carved wardrobe an articulated dummy without head or hands, but with beautifully shaped limbs composed in a shrinking attitude, seemed to be embarrassed by his stare. As we sat enjoying the bivouac hospitality, the dish was really excellent, and our host in a shabby gray jacket still looked the accomplished man about town, my eyes kept on straying towards that corner. Blunt noticed this and remarked that I seemed to be attracted by the Empress. "It's disagreeable," I said. "She seems to lurk there like a shy skeleton at the feast. But why do you give the name of Empress to that dummy?" "Because it sat for days and days in the robes of a Byzantine empress to a painter. I wonder where he discovered these priceless stuffs. You knew him, I believe?" Mills lowered his head slowly, then tossed down his throat some wine out of a Venetian goblet. "This house is full of costly objects. So are all his other houses, so is his place in Paris, that mysterious pavilion hidden away in Passy somewhere." Mills knew the pavilion. The wine had, I suppose, loosened his tongue. Blunt, too, lost something of his reserve. From their talk I gathered the notion of an eccentric personality, a man of great wealth, not so much solitary as difficult of access, a collector of fine things, a painter known only to very few people, and not at all to the public market. But as meantime I had been emptying my Venetian goblet with a certain regularity, the amount of heat given out by that iron stove was amazing. It parched one's throat, and the straw-colored wine didn't seem much stronger than, so much pleasantly flavored water. The voices, and the impressions they conveyed acquired something fantastic to my mind. Suddenly I perceived that Mills was sitting in his shirt sleeves. I had not noticed him taking off his coat. Blunt had unbuttoned his shabby jacket, exposing a lot of starched shirt front with the white tie under his dark shaved chin. He had a strange air of insolence, or so it seemed to me. I addressed him much louder than I intended, really. Did you know that extraordinary man? To know him personally, one had to be either very distinguished or very lucky. Mr. Mills here. Yes, I have been lucky, Mills struck in. T was my cousin who was distinguished. That's how I managed to enter his house in Paris. It was called the Pavilion twice. And saw Dona Rita twice too? Asked Blunt with an indefinite smile and a marked emphasis. Mills was also emphatic in his reply, but with a serious face. I am not an easy enthusiast where women are concerned, but she was without doubt the most admirable find of his amongst all the priceless items he had accumulated in that house, the most admirable. But, you see, of all the objects there she was the only one that was alive, pointed out Blunt with the slightest possible flavor of sarcasm. Immensely so, affirmed Mills. Odd because she was restless, indeed she hardly ever moved from that couch between the windows, you know. No. I don't know. I've never been in there, announced Blunt with that flash of white teeth so strangely without any character of its own, that it was merely disturbing. But she radiated life, continued Mills. He had plenty of it, and it had a quality. My cousin and Henry Alliger had a lot to say to each other, and so I was free to talk to her. At the second visit we were like old friends, which was absurd considering that all the chances were that we would never meet again in this world or in the next. I am not meddling with theology, but it seems to me that in the Elysian fields she'll have her place in a very special company. All this in a sympathetic voice and in his unmoved manner. Blunt produced another disturbing white flash and muttered. I should say mixed. Then louder. As for instance. As for instance Cleopatra, answered Mills quietly. He added after a pause. Ho was not exactly pretty. I should have thought rather a Lavalliere, Blunt dropped with an indifference of which one did not know what to make. He may have begun to be bored with the subject. But it may have been put on, for the whole personality was not clearly definable. I, however, was not indifferent. A woman is always an interesting subject, and I was thoroughly awake to that interest. Mills pondered for a while with a sort of dispassionate benevolence, at last. Yes, Dona Rita, as far as I know her, is so varied in her simplicity, that even that is possible, he said. S. A romantic resigned Lavalliere. Who had a big mouth. I felt moved to make myself heard. Did you know Lavalliere too? I asked impertinently. Mills only smiled at me. Oh, I am not quite so old as that, he said. But it's not very difficult to know facts of that kind about a historical personage. There were some ribald verses made at the time, and Louis XIV was congratulated on the possession. I really don't remember how it goes on the possession of. De si becamauru cui dun rele lauder va. Tra-la-la. Or something of the sort. It needn't be from ear to ear, but it's a fact that a big mouth is often a sign of a certain generosity of mind and feeling. Young man, beware of women with small mouths. Beware of the others too, of course. But a small mouth is a fatal sign. Well, the royalist sympathizers can't charge Dona Rita with any lack of generosity from what I hear. Why should I judge her? I have known her for, say, 6 hours altogether. It was enough to feel the seduction of her native intelligence, and of her splendid physique. And all that was brought home to me so quickly, he concluded, because as he had, what some Frenchman has called the terrible gift of familiarity. Blunt had been listening moodily. He nodded assent. Yes. Mill's thoughts were still dwelling in the past. And even saying goodbye she could put in an instant an immense distance between herself and you. A slight stiffening of that perfect figure, a change of the physiognomy. It was like being dismissed by a person born in the purple. Even if she did offer you her hand as she did to me, it was as if across a broad river. Trick of manner or a bit of truth peeping out. Perhaps she's really one of those inaccessible beings. What do you think, Blunt? It was a direct question which for some reason, as if my range of sensitiveness had been increased already, displeased or rather disturbed me strangely. Blunt seemed not to have heard it. But after a while he turned to me. That thick man, he said in a tone of perfect urbanity, is as fine as a needle. All these statements about the seduction, and then this final doubt expressed after only two visits which could not have included more than 6 hours altogether, and this some 3 years ago. But it is Henry Alliger that you should ask this question, Mr. Mills. I haven't the secret of raising the dead, answered Mills good-humoredly. And if I had I would hesitate. It would seem such a liberty to take with a person one had known so slightly in life. And yet Henry Alliger is the only person to ask about her, after all this uninterrupted companionship of years, ever since he discovered her, all the time, every breathing moment of it, till, literally, his very last breath. I don't mean to say she nursed him. He had his confidential man for that. He couldn't bear women about his person. But then apparently he couldn't bear this one out of his sight. She's the only woman who ever sat to him, for he would never suffer a model inside his house. That's why the girl in the hat, and the Byzantine empresses have that family air, though neither of them is really a likeness of Dona Rita. You know my mother? Mills inclined his body slightly, and a fugitive smile vanished from his lips. Blunt's eyes were fastened on the very center of his empty plate. Then perhaps you know my mother's artistic and literary associations, Blunt went on in a subtly changed tone. Why, mother has been writing verse since she was a girl of 15. She's still writing verse. She's still 15, a spoiled girl of genius. So she requested one of her poet friends, no less than Versoy himself, to arrange for a visit to Henry Alliger's house. At first he thought he hadn't heard aright. You must know that for my mother a man that doesn't jump out of his skin for any woman's caprice is not chivalrous. But perhaps you do know, Dot. Mills shook his head with an amused air. Blunt, who had raised his eyes from his plate to look at him, started afresh with great deliberation. She gives no peace to herself or her friends. My mother's exquisitely absurd. You understand that all these painters, poets, art collectors, and dealers in bric-a-brac, he interjected through his teeth, of my mother, are not in my way, but Versoy lives more like a man of the world. One day I met him at the fencing school. He was furious. He asked me to tell my mother that this was the last effort of his chivalry. The jobs she gave him to do were too difficult. But I dare say he had been pleased enough to show the influence he had in that quarter. He knew my mother would tell the world's wife all about it. He's a spiteful, gingery little wretch. The top of his head shines like a billiard ball. I believe he polishes it every morning with a cloth. Of course they didn't get further than the big drawing room on the first floor, an enormous drawing room with three pairs of columns in the middle. The double doors on the top of the staircase had been thrown wide open, as if for a visit from royalty. You can picture to yourself my mother, with her white hair done in some 18th century fashion and her sparkling black eyes, penetrating into those splendors attended by a sort of bald-headed, vexed squirrel and Henry Alliger coming forward, to meet them like a severe prince with the face of a tombstone crusader, big white hands, muffled silken voice, half-shut eyes, as if looking down at them from a balcony. You remember that trick of his, Mills? Mills emitted an enormous cloud of smoke out of his distended cheeks. I dare say he was furious too, Blunt continued dispassionately. But he was extremely civil. He showed her all the treasures in the room, ivories, enamels, miniatures, all sorts of monstrosities from Japan, from India, from Timbuktu. For all I know. He pushed his condescension so far as to have the girl in the hat brought down into the drawing room half-length, unframed. They put her on a chair for my mother to look at. The Byzantine Empress's was already there, hung on the end wall full-length, gold frame weighing half a ton. My mother first overwhelms the master with thanks, and then absorbs herself in the adoration of the girl in the hat. Then she sighs out. It should be called diaphaneite, if there is such a word. Ah! This is the last expression of modernity. She puts up suddenly her face a mane, and looks towards the end wall. And that Byzantium itself. Who was she, this sullen and beautiful empress? The one I had in my mind was Theodosia. Alliger consented to answer. Originally a slave girl from somewhere. My mother can be marvelously indiscreet when the whim takes her. She finds nothing better to do than to ask the master why he took his inspiration for those two faces from the same model. No doubt she was proud of her discerning eye. It was really clever of her. Alliger, however, looked on it as a colossal impertinence. But he answered in his silkiest tones. Perhaps it is because I saw in that woman something of the women of all time. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.